Welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line, right here on the Legal Line Network. We try each week to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. This week is no exception. We try each week. It's a tough job, but we try each week to demystify the law. I keep thinking I'm going to get in trouble with somebody for trying to demystify it or demystifying it too much. We could get in a lot of trouble, so be careful who you tell, right? All right. You can catch us each and every Wednesday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific time, when we do our live stream. And then, of course, by the next day, the broadcast becomes a Bobcast, as we like to call them. Podcast to some folks, but Bobcast to us. And it's in a searchable archive at bobpittman.com. So you can always find the old programs, find a maybe an interview that you wanted to hear, maybe you missed, or maybe you want to hear again. That's the fun thing about the program these days, is we're able to archive all of the programs. When I was on the old-fashioned radio, it was before the time, well, when I started, it was before the time of streaming, at least that I know of. Maybe it was going on and I wasn't aware of it many, many years ago. And then the funny thing is, the recording of the programs if you wanted to record it, you could record it. And so it was up to you to do it. There was no formal recording except for a very poor quality slow-moving tape that would record for liability purposes, I think is what I figured out one day. Just in case something really weird happened, they'd have a some kind of a record of what was actually said on the air, but it was not a quality tape of any kind. When we were doing the initial show back on Saturday nights, we used to run from 6 to 10 p.m. on Saturday nights on Cairo Radio, the old 710, 71 at that time we call it, Cairo 7, News Radio 71 on the dial, AM dial. Anyway, when we used to do that, we would be taping the program during that 4 hours, and then it would replay between 1 and 5 a.m. on Sunday morning. I remember one time a friend of mine calling me up saying, Bob, I fell asleep on the couch, and I had the TV on Channel 7, and it had gone off the air, and all of a sudden I heard your voice in the room. And so apparently what was happening is the broadcast was being replayed not only on the radio between 1 and 5, but also behind the test pattern on the old Channel 7. That's funny. Who knows? Anyway, so I was behind the test pattern on a TV. Tesla, I don't think, does anybody go off the air anymore? I don't think anybody goes off the air. It's like more than 24/7 now. But it's a lot of fun. All right, you can give us a call during the program. We've got some fun ones coming up, by the way. Next week we'll be talking to Howard Strauss, expert ace attorney out of Florida. He'll be on the air with us, talking about entity planning. Yeah, that's interesting. Why would you need it? Well, we'll talk about that next week. The following week, we're looking to have some tips and pointers on the new tax laws that have come up. The changes to the tax laws. And we'll probably spend some time talking about quite a number of interesting changes that have occurred over the past year on tax laws. Lots of good programs coming up. Looking for your calls, of course, too. During the program, you're always welcome to call in at 253-471-9694. 253-471-9694. Of course, you can always catch us on the Bobcast at bobpittman.com. Just go to the Legal Line page and look for the archive, and you can take a look and see what shows you might have missed. Maybe you want to hear the fun one that we did with the attorney who defended the Green River Killer. That's an interesting one. I have to listen to that one again myself. He wrote a great book. The book is referenced there at the website, too. We do keep a list of books, recommended reading list at the website, bobpittman.com. Also have some interesting links that are available, too, at the website as well. Events coming up. I will be on the old-fashioned radio again a couple times. I'm going to be a guest of the Real Estate Today, guest of Tom Kelly's on Real Estate Today on Seattle's 97.3 Cairo FM And that'll be 9 a.m., I think, between 9 and 10 a.m. on Sunday, January 23rd, 2011. If you missed that, hopefully there'll be a podcast. I'll check to see if there will be or not. And then, again on the radio, January 29th, that's a Saturday, January 29th, 10 a.m., 10 to 11, on Seattle's AM 770. So over on the AM dial, I'll go from the FM dial over to the AM dial. That'll be 11 o'clock again. I'm going to be a guest on aging options. And we're going to talk about the new estate tax law, answer some questions, and have a little fun with that. I am doing a talk for the North Sound Development Association coming up in Everett on the 25th. And that one you have to sign up for. Registration's available. Mainly it's folks who are involved in planned giving. And if you've got a group, if you're up north especially, you probably should be a member of that North Sound Development Association. But that should be fun. There's information on our website under the events tab. So take a look at that as well. So, Diane had a good question this week. What were you thinking about?
Well, I wanted to remind you that you can also send us questions to Jeff.
Oh, good point.
I don't know if you mentioned that or not.
No, I didn't. Jeff, J-E-F-F, Jeff at bobpittman.com. Questions during the week can be emailed in. Good point.
Yeah, and then we've had several calls asking about what do you do when a loved one passes away, as legal things. What do you do?
That's such a tough one.
It is.
Death is just so tough to deal with, and everybody deals with it in a different way. I think over the years, that's one thing that has become apparent, that even though I've dealt with so many people who have lost spouses, for example, mm-hmm. it affects every one of them in a different way. I mean, there's some similarity. Obviously, the person is gone. And I think it's that finality. The fact that they're gone. You can't pick up your cell phone and call them anymore. You can't, when you go home, I hear this from a number of folks, you're going home to an empty house. And it's so difficult. So no one can know how difficult it is except the person actually going through it. We can try, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't try to help and try to talk to folks. And, you know, don't ignore it, I guess, is one thing in terms of if you're just a friend, you know, be a friend trying to help out. You know, don't ignore it. Don't pretend it didn't exist. And ask what you can do. But from a legal standpoint, there are lots of things that need to be done. If in fact you have gone, in fact, I had a call a while back, someone had gone to a relative's house and they were dead, they had died, and they found them, they discovered them at the house. And that's a tough one, needless to say. What do you want to do? You want to call 911, believe it or not. It sounds funny. I mean, it sounds funny. I mean, the person's died. They're not going to be able to come in and help. But you want to call 911 and report it. And typically the police, at least in a lot of jurisdictions, want to come out and just check to make sure that things seem like they are above board and that something bad hasn't happened, some foul play. You know, is there any evidence of that? And then, of course, you're going to call in. Sometimes a person will be taken then to the medical examiner's office. Remember Quincy? Well, not everybody remembers Quincy. I remember Quincy. The L.A. Medical Examiner, great program that goes back a ways, doesn't it? That goes back to the 70s. I shouldn't admit that, should I? But if there is any kind of evidence that there either has been foul play or just, you know, someone dies all of a sudden that's not expected, the person hasn't been sick. I mean, it may be that there's going to be an autopsy. So my point is, by calling 911, you'll get the clearance that you need. I suppose if you call a funeral home, maybe you have an arrangement, maybe there's something prearranged even that you know about, they're going to help too, and they'll call in 911 if necessary. But typically we want to call 911. And they'll take it from there. In terms of the documents, it's so overwhelming, of course, to have the death occur. But you want to try to organize the documents. So you want to look, is there a will? Look to see if there's a will. Is there a trust? Has the person done one of these revocable living trust arrangements? You know, for us, we do a lot of guidebook-style planning for folks, and so there's a big red book with all the legal stuff in it. Makes it a little bit easier. Typically, if there's a will, there's not going to be that kind of a guidebook-style arrangement. But you want to find the original will, any documents that relate to funeral planning. Sometimes people have gone out and prearranged their memorial and funeral services. You know, does the person want to be cremated or are they going to be buried? I think in this part of the world, out here in Washington State, most people seem to, I don't know if it's a majority, but most people, I think, want to be cremated. Isn't that interesting? I wonder if that's true. Now that I say it, I've got to think about that. You know what we're going to do, by the way, is we're going to get someone on. I talked to someone just a short while ago about coming on, someone who works with one of the funeral homes and cemeteries, and just talk about, you know, what we need to know to get through that. That's a process all by itself. So you find out, has the person made any kind of prearrangements? Have they said what they want done? Because otherwise we're going to have some guesswork coming into it. And guesswork is almost always bad when it comes to something like that. I suppose if you were to have someone buried and then it turned out that they wanted to be cremated, you can reverse that, but it's really tough to go the other way. You know? I remember one time there was a nice fellow who had passed away, and they had the funeral and everything, and they discovered later that he wanted to be, I guess it's not buried, interred, is that the word, above ground. And he did not want to be cremated. Luckily, they had not cremated him. But he wanted to be interred, I guess it is, in the mausoleum arrangement above ground, very important to him. And so they were able to correct that problem, you know, that issue. Sometimes people put that information in a will. It's okay to put it there, but you want to have it somewhere else because sometimes the wills aren't looked at until after the burial, after the funeral service has occurred. So you want to keep that information in a good spot. So find out if you can, see if you can figure out what the person wanted, and then obviously get that underway and taken care of and try the best you can to honor the wishes of the person. I remember a while back a nice fellow who wanted to be cremated, and then half of his ashes were to go into Puget Sound and the other half were to go into the Ganges River. And he had arranged, and we had talked about it, he had arranged for two people to fly half of his ashes over to India. And they were to spend basically a week over there. And I remember the trustee calling me and saying, do I really have to do that? I mean, that's going to be expensive. As if it was their own money. It was it was interesting. So make sure it's clear in writing. There are forms that you can use to make your memorial wishes known. And so it's important to do that. So check on that. So because you got to get the funeral and memorial stuff underway right away. If there is a will, and that's the format that's being used, then you're going to want to make an appointment with the attorney who's going to help with that process. A lot of times it can be, or will a lot of times be the attorney who prepared the documents. Doesn't have to be. If it's a trust arrangement and the assets were transferred into the trust ahead of time, the process of closing out the affairs is going to be a little bit easier because you may not have to go through the probate process. Typically, with a will, you're facing a probate, which in Washington is not a nightmare, certainly, but it's there's a hassle factor. There's a hassle factor to everything we do. And there's more of a hassle to a probate, one would say, than there is with regard to the closeout of a revocable living trust, especially when the living trust has been properly funded, meaning that assets were transferred into that trust. So gather the documents, get an appointment with the attorney, and get over and take a look at what you've got. You're going to want to order death certificates, and they'll want to know how many you want. And I have yet to be able to figure out ahead of time, and maybe someone else can do it, but how many death certificates you're going to need. I just figure I'm always going to be wrong. It's, you know, if you order, you know, if you order one, you're probably going to be wrong for sure. If you order 50, you're probably going to be wrong on the other end, and on the high end, I suspect. You're going to find some places will want to see one of the certified copies that come from the county, and they're going to give it back to you. They're going to photocopy it, but then keep in mind they're photocopying from one of the certified ones, so they know that it's correct. If you just take them a photocopy, they don't know that it's correct, especially with the way photocopiers are today. You can probably do some pretty darn good color copies of stuff, and it looks a lot like an original. So you're going to order a number of death certificates. If I were just picking a number, I would say probably 6 to 12 is the number is where you're going to end up, and you'll probably either have an extra one or you'll still need one with that number, but that's probably what I would guesstimate if I were going to guesstimate. So you get the death certificates going. You want to then take an inventory of assets. If you're the person in the document, like the personal representative or the trustee, inventory the assets. Now, that may mean, in some cases, actually cataloging the personal effects. Oftentimes, it's kind of grouping them together. The document, the will, or the trust may refer to lists or memorandums that may be out there saying who gets what. So, like my list might say, I want my watch to go to cousin Fred or something, and that'll be on my list along with maybe some other things. It may be that some or all of the personal effects are going to simply be divided up among several people. And then we get the fun of conducting that ceremony where people kind of grab stuff. And sometimes people will have little lottery systems or drawing straws to figure out the order of picking. Sometimes people just take the personal items and don't give anybody else a chance. So you want to try and safeguard the assets, safeguard the personal effects, clearly safeguard all the other assets, accounts, real estate. Make a list. And even on personal effects, if there are some real seriously high-value items, list those separately. You may need to get appraisals on those. If it's like personal stuff, you may just be putting down a category of furniture, miscellaneous household items. If you were to go to our house, you probably wouldn't find any real silverware, I don't think. We still call it silverware, but it really isn't anymore. I ran across someone the other day who had some really nice silverware, but they said, you know, we probably use it twice a year, maybe. And so if there is silverware, I guess you might catalog that. So you've got your inventory of assets. So you've got maybe the three bank accounts, let's say, a brokerage account, an IRA, and so forth, maybe a house. You're going to want to then get some values, especially date of death values. How much was the house worth on the date of death? A lot of times you have to get an appraisal for that. Sometimes if you're going to sell the house right away, maybe you can get by without that appraisal. Maybe you don't have to get that. If you have stock that's not in a retirement style account or IRA, you're going to get something called stepped up basis. So you need to know the date of death value. Example, let's say that I purchased Microsoft stock for $10, and when I die it's worth $20. Well, the basis goes from 10 to 20. So it's just like I bought it on the day I died in terms of whether there's any capital gains tax, income tax. So if I had sold that Microsoft stock the day before I died, there would have been a $10 gain and I would have had to pay tax on that. If instead my family sells it the day after I die for the 20, there won't be any capital gains tax because the basis went from the 10 that I paid for it up to the 20 it was worth on the day I died. Now, it could go the other way, by the way. Let's say I paid 20, and when I die, it's worth 10. Well, the basis also adjusts, but it goes down this time. So, you want to work with an accountant on that. The estate planning attorney who prepared the documents is usually a good choice to start with in terms of kind of quarterbacking the process. Again, if it's a living trust that's funded, it's going to be a fairly easy, straightforward process. If there's a will to be probated, it'll be a little bit more cumbersome. There's work to do no matter what. Lots of things to do. You want to notify the groups like Social Security if the person was old enough to be collecting Social Security, if there's some kind of retirement check coming in. You want to get the details on it, notify the company or whoever's paying it, find out if there's any kind of residual benefit. You'll be looking for life insurance benefits, and sometimes those are a little bit hard to find because they're paid-up policies, and you have to do some checking. Sometimes you're digging around in people's drawers and chest of drawers kind of thing, looking for documents and looking for all the assets that the person might have. Maybe there's gold coins. Maybe there's who knows what there is. So taking an inventory, that's going to be a big job or small job depending on what kind of assets are involved. And then you're going to follow the directives in the will or the trust. What is it that you're supposed to do? Who gets what? How does everything get passed out? Are there trusts to be set up for individual beneficiaries? Are there outright distributions to be made? The whole process. So getting with an estate plan attorney to talk about this is a good idea. Having some notes in advance. If you're the one thinking about dying, you want to kind of get your house in order and get everything set, and so that it's not going to be such a hard process when the time comes for your beneficiaries and your heirs. I always think about all the junk one has in a house or apartment. I mean, just all the stuff. And it's hard enough for us to go through that stuff, but imagine leaving that for the survivors. I mean, what a hassle. And stuff that we think is really neat. And really valuable, you know. It may have no meaning whatsoever to the heirs. I know. We were talking about that a little bit ago. You know, what a hassle to have to go through all this stuff. You know, we need to be working on thinning our stuff out, I think, anyway. The older you get, I think the worse it gets. I don't know. And I tend to accumulate lots of miscellaneous stuff, I think, anyway. I don't know. We got to work on that, too. So there is some good information out there. We're gonna. There's a good a book on the reading list. Actually, there's a couple of books on the reading list that you might take a look at in terms of being a personal representative. And good information out there. The we'll check that and see. In fact, what we might do is maybe I'll work on a little blog piece that we could put up that will highlight some of the information that you need to think about when it comes to a death, dealing with a death. There have been some booklets and guides out there. A lot of some of them are a little bit out of date, although a lot of stuff, of course, remains current with a death, like the idea of checking with Social Security, getting death certificates and so forth. One thing I worry about is all the passwords people have for accounts and even their email. It seems a shame that the email just gets locked down, I guess, or it's just gone. And people might be still sending email to somebody, but who's going to have access? So you've got to come up with some way of keeping your passwords and what accounts they relate to, but keeping them in a safe way so the bad guys don't get them. Two books, by the way. One is called How to Settle an Estate. It's a manual for executors and trustees. It's a really good one, step-by-step guide, Limeburg and Plotnick. That is on our reading list, so take a look at that. There's another one I kind of like, too, and it's a book that the authors are Hughes and Klein. That's on the reading list, too. Take a look at the books. And I always like the idea that we're doing some of the work ourselves to educate ourselves so that we make better use of an attorney's time. You know, for the most part, attorneys are charging for their time, not always, but a lot of times in this kind of a thing, in a closeout of an estate, it's based on time. And so if you can limit the amount of time you have to have for the professionals, the accountants and the attorneys, then you're going to save a little bit of money. And being educated about the process is always a good idea, I think. So take a look at that. Hopefully that helps a little bit. Have some fun with some of this stuff while you can have fun. I always think going out to plan your funeral and memorial stuff should be fun. If you're going out, there's nothing on the horizon. It's not like you're sick and you're going out and saying, "Boy, I'm almost gone and I need to get this done." If you go out and when you're feeling well and maybe, you know, take someone with you, have a little fun, go have lunch afterwards or before. I don't know which is better. But have some fun with it. You'll also make better decisions, I think. If you're making decisions about funeral stuff after the fact, of course, you're not making them for yourselves at that point, but your relatives are stuck with this, and they may very well overspend on the funeral arrangements. Now, it's also possible, depending on who you are, that they might underspend. And maybe you don't want that to happen either. So, what was the show the other day? There was a program on, was it King of Queens or something? And Arthur had picked up his headstone. When his wife had died, remember, he'd made one up, and it was to save money, I think. He had a headstone that had her on there with her beginning and end date, and then he was on there. But they had started the end year. It was 19 blank. Right, and this is just before the year 2000, and he was concerned that he had to die before the year 2000 to take advantage of his plaque headstone. So I don't know. So if you do make up a headstone for yourself, you know, be sure to leave lots of latitude there in the years, because you don't want to be closed into a box on when you have to die. Good advice. All right, plan to be with us each and every Wednesday again from 3 o'clock Pacific time. And then check out the Bobcast. Look on the Legal Line page for information and for highlights and comments about some of the Bobcasts that are up there. Send us your notes, your comments. If you have a request for a particular topic, if you'd like to hear a certain guest talk about a particular topic, let us know. And chances are we'll be able to put that together. Give us a call, of course. You can call us at the during the program at 253-471-9694. Of course, you can email us during the week. Email Jeff, that's J-E-F-F, Jeff@BobPittman.com. And be sure to stop by BobPittman.com and check on what's new and what's up. Thank you for being with us. This is Bob Pittman for the Legal Line Network.